Hello and welcome to the Covert Nerd Podcast. In today's episode, we look at an Amazon TV show adapted from a comic book. Then we look into the foreign comic book industry. And lastly, we have a Middle Earth Minute. So let's dive right in and nerd it up. I want to take a second here and let you know that I've been busy the last several weeks with moving two kids to college. Then I had a two-week vacation. I plan to get back into a more normal recording schedule. Thank you for your patience and thank you for listening. First, I want to talk about a comic book called Black Sad that's published in America by Dark Horse Comics. The stories are about John Black Sad, a crime-fighting, anthropomorphized cat in a film noir, late 50s style setting in the United States. All of the characters are anthropomorphic animals whose species reflect their personality, character type, and role in the story. Animal stereotypes are often used. For example, nearly all of the policemen are dogs, such as German Shepherds, Bloodhounds, and Foxes, while underworld characters are often reptiles or amphibians, and the female characters are often much more human-looking than their male counterparts. The series tries to reflect a dirty, realist outlook and a dark cinematic style through detailed watercolor drawings, including real-life places and cities, which also contribute to the realistic feel of the series, despite the fact that characters are animals. The style of drawing has evolved, though, throughout the series, with later issues displaying sharper, higher quality color and fewer grainy lines. The first volume was published in 2000, which is the one I read, and has three separate stories where Black Sad has to solve a mystery. Black Sad was created by Spanish authors Juan Diaz Canales, who is the writer, and Juanjo Garnado, who is the artist, published by French publisher Dargaud. Though both authors are Spanish, their main target audience for Black Sad is the French market, then other languages later. Carl on the Goat Kicker podcast has talked about the quality of comics coming out of Europe and other countries. One was called Orbital and another was called The Mercenary that he mentioned, both adapted from other languages, and I know there's many, many more. I wonder if this is a market that maybe American publishers haven't really tapped into but could tap into for new material like Dark Horse did with Black Sad. Or at least the material is new to us anyway here in America. I do have a couple places I found online that you can buy these comics that have been translated into English, and I'll include the links in the show notes at covertnerd.net. Next, I want to talk about The Boys, which is a new TV show on Amazon Prime. I was a little skeptical at first about this show, but I was sucked in after I watched the first episode. The reason I was skeptical was the trailer for the show showed a plot concept that I had consumed in media before, and I'm sure maybe you have as well. Heroes with a dark, sadistic side that maybe aren't so good. Similarly, the movie I Am Mother on Netflix, not necessarily a new concept, but both are executed well. It just goes to show that the same story arc can be given new life when new characters are applied and it is done well. Okay, back to The Boys. It's based on a series from Dynamite Comics written by Garth Ennis and co-created, designed, and illustrated by Derek Robertson. It was originally published by Wildstorm DC Comics before moving to Dynamite Entertainment. The series is set between 2006 and 2008 in a world where superheroes exist. However, most of the superheroes in the series universe are corrupted by their celebrity status and often engage in reckless behavior, compromising the safety of the world. The story follows a small group of CIA agents, informally known as The Boys, led by Butcher, and also consisting of other characters called Mother's Milk, the Frenchman, the Female, and new addition, Wee Huey Campbell, who are in charge of monitoring the superhero community, often leading to gruesome confrontations and dreadful results. In a parallel key subplot, also follows Annie Starlight January, a young naive superhero who joins the Seven, which is the most prestigious and corrupted superhero group in the world, and the boys' most powerful enemy. I like the concept of who's going to keep the superheroes in line in case they try to take over the world or go evil. The heroes keep the quote-unquote regular people in line, but who keeps the heroes in line? In some crazy way, the world needs both to keep each other in line. It's when the balance gets out of sync that trouble starts to happen, when one side becomes too powerful and tries to take out the other side. So check it out. The show is on Amazon Prime if you have a subscription, or you can go pick up the comic books as well. But both are definitely on the hard R side, so just warning there. But check it out, and I will include a link in the show notes to both. In the last Middle Earth minute, we left off after Annatar revealed himself to be the ancient servant of Melkor, the original Dark Lord of Middle Earth. If you want to hear the full story, go back and listen to it in their previous episodes. I'll try to include a link in the show notes. After his revelation in this time, Sauron became known as the Dark Lord of Mordor. For centuries, he secretly raised the Dark Tower near Mount Doom, constructed the Black Gate of Mordor to prevent invasion, and raised a massive army of orcs, trolls, and men. Sauron's power had reached its zenith in the year 1693 of the Second Age. He raged war on Middle-earth. The War of the Elves and Sauron was a bloody conflict, which destroyed Eregion, where Sauron had instructed the elves in ringmaking. He seized the Seven and Nine Rings and murdered the elven maker of the Rings of Power. His body was impaled on a spike and paraded at the head of Sauron's legions. Sauron besieged Rivendell, battled Moria and Lothlorien. The elves were pushed back almost to the coasts, while their dwarven allies, who also rejected Sauron, retreated back behind the walls of Moria, where Sauron could no longer assail them. Sauron was the master of almost all of Middle-earth. But the Numenoreans, the race of men who are Aragorn's ancestors, and I plan on to go in detail about Numenor in another episode because their story is fascinating. But for now, let's focus on Sauron. The Numenoreans, a special race of men, lived on the island of Numenor in the sea between Middle-earth and Valinor. They responded to the elven call for aid and sent a relief force. Their combined armies rallied and were able to defeat Sauron's army in the region that would later be called the Shire. After heavy fighting and the Dark Lord was utterly defeated, he fled back to Mordor with little more than his own bodyguard and a handful of orcs. As corrupting the elves had failed him, Sauron decided to distribute the Rings of Power to men and dwarves. The dwarves also failed him, as they proved too hardy and resistant to the corruptive power. However, the nine men were corrupted and eventually faded, being turned into the Nazgul, or Ringwraiths, his chief servants. Nonetheless, while Sauron's subsequent power never quite matched the height it had during the war with the elves, many of his most powerful enemies' homelands had been devastated. Relative to his enemies, Sauron was actually in a stronger position now than he previously was. His empire continued to expand to dominate barbarian men to the far south and to the east, becoming their god king. Throughout this, Sauron remained faithful, his old allegiance, building temples to the worship of Morgoth, where human sacrifice was being practiced. Because of this, toward the end of the Second Age, Sauron assumed the titles of Lord of the Earth and King of Men. This new title offended the arrogant Numenorean king Ar-Pharazôn, who had already started to fall under the shadow. The proud king came to Middle-earth with a great force of arms, and Sauron's forces fled. Realizing he could not defeat them with military strength, Sauron allowed himself to be taken as a hostage by the king. And here's a quote from the Silmarillion talking about this event. "And Sauron came. Even from his mighty tower of Barad-dûr he came and made no offer of battle, for he perceived that the power and majesty of the kings of the sea surpassed all rumor of them, so that he could not trust even his greatest servants to withstand them. And Sauron passed over the sea and looked upon the land of Numenor and on the city of Armenelos in the days of its glory, and he was astounded. But his heart within was filled with the more envy and hate." End quote. Interesting thoughts on that quote. Tolkien wrote the same ominous phrase when the elven king faced Melkor, Sauron's master. And it just simply says, "And Melkor came." Nothing more elaborate like, "Sauron in all his might faced King Ar-Pharazôn." Also notice that Sauron was astounded by the glory of Numenor. Now remember, this is coming from an extremely old being who has seen the splendor of the West, or Valinor, home of the gods, essentially. It's hard to imagine how amazing Numenor was. But anyway, back to the story. This was part of his plan to corrupt the civilization from within. With crafty words, Sauron grew from captive to advisor of the king, and then he was known as Tarmarin. Notice he used his original name, Myrin, from long ago. He converted many to the worship of Melkor, becoming the high priest of the cult of Melkor. He had the White Tree, the grandfather of the White Tree of Gondor, cut down, and in its place raised a great temple in which he performed human sacrifices, persecuting those who were still faithful. Beside introducing the worship of Melkor, Sauron also helped the people to design greater engines and amass more wealth, and soon the Numenoreans returned to Middle-earth, where they cruelly hunted and enslaved people for the eventual sacrifice. While Sauron ruled behind the scenes, Ar-Pharazôn became the mightiest tyrant in the world since Melkor himself. When Sauron had built up the pride of the king, he struck at the one thing the king did not have: immortality. And this is another quote from the Silmarillion. This is Sauron talking to Ar-Pharazôn. And he said, "The Valar have possessed themselves of the land where there is no death, and they lie to you concerning it, hiding it as best they may, because of their avarice and their fear lest the kings of men should wrest from them the deathless realm and rule the world in their stead. And though doubtless the gift of life unending is not for all, but only for such as are worthy, being men of might and pride and great lineage, yet against all justice is it done that this gift, which is due, should be withheld from the King of Kings, Ar-Pharazôn, mightiest of the sons of earth, to whom Manwë alone can be compared, if even he. But great kings do not brook denials and take what is their due." It was with these words Ar-Pharazôn acted. He convinced the king to rebel against the Valar and attacked Valinor itself, claiming he would gain immortality if he did so. Eru, the supreme god, then directly intervened. Numenor was drowned under the sea, and the king and his great army were buried under the earth of Valinor to await final judgment. Sauron during this time was in the temple of Melkor and was caught in the ensuing flood. However, his spirit survived. Although severely weakened by the destruction, he fled back to his tower in Mordor. Sauron's spirit returned to Mordor, where he slowly rebuilt his strength during the time known as the Dark Years, and he was unable to assume his fair shape ever again. Meanwhile, hundreds of faithful Numenoreans, led by Elendil, father of Isildur, were saved from the flood by escaping on 9 boats shortly before the waters came, and they founded the kingdoms of Gondor and Arnor in Middle-earth. Sauron still considered them his hated enemies, and he launched a preemptive attack on Gondor in 3429. These men, led by Elendil and his sons, formed a last alliance of men and elves. And under the elven king Gil-galad, together they fought Sauron in the War of the Last Alliance. The alliance advanced against Mordor and defeated Sauron's forces in battle, and they finally laid siege to Barad-dûr. The siege lasted for 7 years. When Sauron left his forces, engaging in direct combat, Elendil and Gil-galad fought Sauron and vanquished him. Side note here, Gil-galad was the grandson of the elven king who fought Sauron's master, Melkor, to his death. However, in this battle, both were killed. Isildur, son of Elendil, cut the one ring from Sauron's finger and claimed it. Later, the ring betrayed him and was lost for more than 2,000 years. After his death in the War of the Last Alliance, Sauron has lost his ability to form a physical body for a long time. And I will end there because if you've watched the movies or read the books, you know what happens next. To sum up the Sauron story, he ultimately wanted order in Middle-earth. Seeing things out of control bothered him. If the end meant order and peace, and it came at the cost of lives, then it was justified. The ends justify the means in his mind. Remember in the previous episode, it said of Sauron, he had a love of order and perfection and disliked anything wasteful. We see this concept in other fiction. For example, when the Emperor in Star Wars Episode 3 said, if him and Vader can exterminate all the Jedi, then the galaxy will have peace. It's a fictional example of human nature. Sometimes we're blind to our actions when we focus so much on our ambition. When we are too driven, we sometimes drive over those who we care about. And Sauron is a fun character to explore. Since we get very little in the movies or the books about his background, I hope I've inspired you to dig a little deeper into the world of Middle-earth. Like I said previously, in the next Middle-earth Minute, we'll discuss the rise and fall of Numenor. It's a fascinating story about the potential of the human race. As we close, I want to announce to you that I am now part of the Podcast Arcade. They're a great bunch of people who are creative and helpful. I couldn't ask for a better bunch of people. I will put a link in the show notes so you can check out some of the other awesome shows that they have. I'm also privileged to be a part of another creative group called The Last Starfighters Entertainment Group. It's a local group of artists, podcasters, and even puppeteers. They're an amazing bunch of friends who support each other in all of our endeavors. I'll put a link in the show notes so you can check out all the different projects that they work on. And last but not least, I want to do a shout out to a few listeners who have interacted with me recently online. Nicholas from Sweden and Joe from the Drinking at Bible Study podcast. Thanks for the interaction online. And if you want, as a listener, please give me some feedback online. Go to covertnerd.net to see all the different ways you can contact me on social media, email. And I want to thank you, the listener. I appreciate the time that you give me. I hope you've enjoyed the content. And until next time, nerd it up.